John chapter 5, I began in verse 1. After this, there was a feast of the Jews, and Jesus went up to Jerusalem. Now there is at Jerusalem by the sheep market a pool, which is called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda, having five porches. In these lay a great multitude of impotent folk, of blind, halt, withered, waiting for the moving of the water. For an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. When Jesus saw him lie and knew that he had been now a long time in that case, he saith unto him, Wilt thou be made whole? The impotent man answered him, Sir, I have no man when the water is troubled to put me into the pool. But while I am coming, another steppeth down before me. Jesus saith unto him, Rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, and took up his bed and walked, and on the same day was the Sabbath. The Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, It is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, He that made me whole, the same said unto me, Take up thy bed and walk. Then asked they him, What man is it that said unto thee, Take up thy bed and walk? And he that was healed wist not who it was, for Jesus had conveyed himself away, a multitude being in that place. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, Behold, thou art made whole, sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The man departed and told the Jews that it was Jesus which had made him whole. And therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus, and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. But Jesus answered them, My Father worketh hitherto, and I work. Therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him, because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do. And what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth. And he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raises up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son, that all men should honor the Son, even as they honor the Father. He that honoreth not the Son, honoreth not the Father which hath sent him. Verily, verily, I say unto you, he that heareth my word, and believeth on him that sent me, hath everlasting life, and shall not come into condemnation, but is passed from death unto life. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the hour is coming, and now is, when the dead shall hear the voice of the Son of God, and they that hear shall live. For as the Father hath life in himself, so hath he given to the Son to have life in himself, and hath given him authority to execute judgment also, because he is the Son of Man. Marvel not at this, for the hour is coming in the which all that are in the graves shall hear his voice, and they shall come forth, they that have done good unto the resurrection of life, and they that have done evil unto the resurrection of damnation. I can of myself do nothing. As I hear, I judge. My judgment is just, because I seek not mine own will, but the will of the Father which hath sent me. If I bear witness of myself, my witness is not true. There is another that beareth witness of me, and I know that the witness which he witnesses of me is true. Ye sent unto John, and he bare witness unto the truth. But I receive not testimony from men, but these things I say that ye might be saved. He was a burning and a shining light, and ye were willing for a season to rejoice in that light. But I have a greater witness than that of John, for the works which the Father hath given me to finish, the same works that I do bear witness of me that the Father hath sent me. And the Father himself, which hath sent me, hath borne witness of me. Ye have neither heard his voice at any time, nor seen his shape. And ye have not his word abiding in you, for whom he hath sent, him ye believe not. Search the scriptures, for in them ye think ye have eternal life, and they are they which testify of me. And ye will not come to me that ye might have life. I receive not honor from men, but I know you, that ye have not the love of God in you. I am come in my Father's name, and ye receive me not. If another shall come in his own name, him ye will receive. How can ye believe which receive honor one of another and seek not the honor that cometh from God only? Do not think that I will accuse you to the Father. There is one that accuses you, even Moses, in whom ye trust. For had ye believed Moses, ye would have believed me, for he wrote of me. But if ye believe not his writings, how shall ye believe my words? It's a lengthy reading, and we're going to try to cover what we can of this evening. There's three things in this text that I want you to notice, and that's what we'll try to look at. Number one is the miracle of the healing of this man. The second thing I want us to notice is Jesus exposing the hypocrisy of the Jews and their religion. And the third thing is Jesus' great teaching concerning himself and his work. The beginning of this chapter and this account deals with the miracle of the healing of this man. But the miracle is not the main point here of this text. It's certainly important, but the miracle is simply used to give Jesus a means or an occasion to give this great teaching that he sets forth in John 5. This text in John 5 is one of the greatest texts in the Bible from the words of Jesus himself concerning himself and his work. You will not find a greater passage in the scripture stating the relationship of the Father and the Son and the work that Jesus Christ was sent to do. Now, again, the miracle is not the main point here. I know you've heard that old saying that sometimes you can't see the forest for the trees, but you can turn that around also. Sometimes it's hard to see the trees because of the forest. And sometimes we focus our attention upon one thing, but we miss something else. Again, the miracle is important, but what Jesus has to say following that, I think, is more important, because it does give us an insight. Notice again, verses 1 through verse 9, you have this miracle. In verse 1, this feast of the Jews was at Jerusalem. What feast that was, we're not told, and there's no need to guess or speculate upon what feast it was. But there at Jerusalem by the sheep market, you have this pool called in the Hebrew tongue Bethesda. And around this pool, verse 3, lay a great multitude of impotent folk, blind, halt, withered, and they're waiting for the moving of the water. Now, how many are there? We don't know, but again, there's a great multitude there. But something very unusual occurred at this pool. Verse 4, an angel went down at a certain season into the pool and troubled the water. Whosoever then first, after the troubling of the water, stepped in was made whole of whatsoever disease he had. And again, this is something out of the ordinary happening here. I don't know of it happening at any other occasion. Verse 4 again, at a certain season, and again, we're not told what season, we're not told whether it was on a regular timely basis or whether it just happened at different times, but it just says, at a certain season, an angel went down into the pool. An angel of God would go down into the pool and trouble the water. Now, notice that word trouble there. It means to stir or to agitate the water. That same word trouble, if you look in John 11 and then verse 33, notice that same word is used over here. John 11 and then verse 33. When Jesus therefore saw her weeping, and the Jews also weeping, which came with her, he groaned in the spirit and was troubled. It's the same word that's used in our text. Also in John chapter 14 and in verse 1, it's the same word that is used there. Let not your heart be troubled. Don't let it be agitated, is what the Lord is saying here. And again, it's the very same word that's used back in John chapter 5 and in verse 1. So you have this occasion of this great multitude there at this pool of Bethesda. And they're waiting, it says in verse 3, for the moving of the water. And Jesus comes to this place, and the Bible says in verse 5, a certain man was there which had an infirmity 38 years. Now, how long this man had been at this pool, I don't know. But we are told that his infirmity had been for 38 years. And this man seemed to have lost all hope. He seemed to be just one that had lost all hope. Sometimes when problems, and maybe it's an infirmity or affliction or something else, affect someone for so long, they just lose all hope. And this man seemed to have lost all hope. And you'll notice in verse 6, when Jesus saw him, and why Jesus singled this man out, I don't know. It's just the sovereignty of the Lord. I don't know of anything that would stand out about this particular man over the rest of this great multitude that was there. But this man was there, and Jesus uses him and this occasion. Verse 6 says, when Jesus saw him lie. Now there was this certain man. Again, verse 5, a certain man was there. And out of this multitude, Jesus singles him out. Notice the omniscience of Jesus in verse 6. And knew that he had been now a long time in that case. He saith unto him, wilt thou be made whole? Now that might sound like a foolish question to us. A man had been sick with this infirmity for 38 years. And Jesus asked him, you could phrase this, do you want to be well? Do you want to be well? The question itself is interesting. Wilt thou be made whole? Notice that word wilt. Do you have the will to be made whole? Do you have the will? In other miracles that Jesus performed, Jesus would call upon faith. Do you believe? If you believe, this so-and-so can happen. But here, he goes to the will and not to the faith. But faith is required, and faith will be manifest here. But he did not ask the man, do you have the faith to be made whole? He asked him, do you have the will? Do you have the will? Wilt thou be made whole? Now, again, faith is going to be very important in this, and I'll mention this now. In verse 8 and in verse 9, Jesus tells this man, rise, take up thy bed, and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, took up his bed, and walked. You'll notice that there is no hesitation here. The Bible is very clear to tell us, immediately upon the words of the Lord to this man who had this infirmity 38 years, immediately took up his bed and walked. And I think I've mentioned to you before the order of events here. I think is very important, and it certainly does show faith. Here was a man that was laying on his bed, and that bed would be to us like a pallet, and not able to move on his own, evidently. But at the words of Jesus, Jesus told him very specifically what to do. Look at verse 8. Number one, rise, get up. That's the first thing he told him. The second thing he told him was, take up your bed or your pallet. And then the third thing, he said, walk. Well, the man in verse 9 took up his bed and walked. Now, from a human standpoint, you might think that the man might get up and try to take a few steps, and then if he could see he could make it, then he might take up his pallet. But Jesus said, before you take a step, before you walk, you take up your bed, you're not going to need that anymore. And evidently the man believed Jesus, because before he walked in verse 9, he took up his bed and he walked. And there's just so many interesting little details in this. When Jesus asked that man back in verse 6, wilt thou be made whole? Did you notice the man did not answer his question? He didn't say yes. He didn't say no. But he had reach this helpless and hopeless state of mind that instead of answering the question of Jesus, he seems to blame his continuing condition upon someone else. He said, there's nobody to help me get into the water. And his mind and attention is focused upon his condition and the water and in the pool, but Jesus has to get his attention off of that onto him. And when Jesus did give him the command, again, when you look at the question in verse 6, notice what the man's reply was. It was not an answer to Jesus' question at all. But Jesus has words of power in verse 8. And Jesus' words are full of power. I mean, they're able to call the dead to life. And here he says, rise, take up thy bed and walk. And immediately the man was made whole, took up his bed and walked. Well, again, without any hesitation. Now, if you look on down to verse 14, later, Jesus is going to have a word of warning to this man. Afterward, Jesus findeth him in the temple and said unto him, behold, thou art made whole. Sin no more, lest a worse thing come unto thee. The words there in verse 14 to me imply that this man's condition for 38 years was a chastisement, a punishment for some open sin, some sin that he was committing and living in. When Jesus said, sin no more, he meant do not continue in that sin. Some people get a little confused when Jesus tells someone, sin no more, but he uses that phrase in several places. But the standard of God is always holiness. And we might say, well, it's impossible to sin no more. Well, it is. We're going to sin as long as we live here. But the standard of God is holiness. I would not want to serve a God that had a standard lower than holiness. And that's manifest here in this. Now, again, I'm not going to spend all of our time on the miracle. The key verse, I think, to this whole text in John chapter 5 is verse 9, and it's the latter part of that verse, where it says, on the same day was the Sabbath. That's the key, I think, to everything that we should learn out of John chapter 5. If you notice in verse 10, the Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, it is the Sabbath day. And that's an exclamation. It is the Sabbath day. It's like they're shocked that this man is carrying his bed on the Sabbath day, and it is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. He answered them, he that made me whole, the same said unto me, take up thy bed and walked. Then asked they him, what man is that which said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk? Now, the great miracle had taken place. The man was made whole. But this miracle was done on the Sabbath day. Now, again, in verse 1, this is at Jerusalem. If you look back to John chapter 2, this was not the first miracle that Jesus had performed at Jerusalem. In John chapter 2 and in verse 23, now when Jesus was in Jerusalem at the Passover in the feast day, many believed in his name when they saw the miracles which he did. And in John chapter 4 and in verse 45, then when he was come into Galilee, the Galileans received him, having seen all things that he did at Jerusalem at the feast, for they also went unto the feast. Now, those miracles seem not to have upset the hierarchy in the Jewish religion, but the miracle of John 5 caused a great controversy, and it caused a great conflict because it was performed on the Sabbath day. Now, notice the Jews in John chapter 5. They have nothing to say about the miraculous cure. There's no giving of thanks to God that this man was made whole, but they are very angry at Jesus because their favorite piece of legalism had been violated. Verse 10, the Jews therefore said unto him that was cured, it is the Sabbath day. It is not lawful for thee to carry thy bed. And then in verse 12, what man is that which said unto thee, take up thy bed and walk? Now, it was not, their question was not concerning the cure. They did not ask him, who is it that cured you? Who is it that made you whole? But rather they ask him, who told you to take up your bed and walk on the Sabbath day? And they completely ignore the miraculous cure because one of their traditions in their legalistic religion had been violated. Back in verse 6, this man had been a long time in that case, and Jesus asked him, wilt thou be made whole? But this religious zeal, I would call it, of the Jews outweighed any consideration of this man and him being made whole. Religious zeal, and Brother Justice touched on this in our Bible study Sunday. Religious legalism is a great enemy of the cause of Christ. And this religious zeal and legalism is a great persecuting force in the world. It was then, and it still is now. Just people not concerned about God or people, but their own traditions. Now, in the miracle itself, the man being made whole, and then you have the confrontation of the Jews with this man, the stage is set. Jesus has the circumstances just like he wants to give this great teaching that he has in the remainder of chapter 5. I mean, the occasion is the miracle, but all of this takes place for in order for Jesus, we could say, to have this great stage to give this teaching about himself and about his work. You look at verse 16. Therefore did the Jews persecute Jesus and sought to slay him because he had done these things on the Sabbath day. That Sabbath day was something to them, and they had such a perverse view of it. In verse 18, therefore the Jews sought the more to kill him because he not only had broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. The things that Jesus had to say concerning this. Notice verse 17. But Jesus answered them, my Father worketh, hitherto I work. He's beginning to set before them who he is and his work. In verse 16, it was just the hatred of the Jews at him. They persecuted him and sought to kill him because he had done these things on the Sabbath. And they had no clue that he is the Lord of the Sabbath. And he begins to tell them here about his relationship to the Father. When he made this statement in verse 17, "My Father worketh, hitherto I work," those Jews knew exactly what he was saying. They knew that he was claiming to be God and equal with God. Now they think they have at least two reasons to put him to death. Verse 18, they are stated there, violating the Sabbath and blaspheming. He said, "My Father." And they knew that when he used that phrase, "My Father," it's different than what you and I would say. God is our Father, but not in the same relationship of Jesus and the Father. He is God's only begotten Son, and there's wording used here that points out that's my Father in this very particular and important relationship that's different than any other relationship. And they understood the word. And in verse 18, they sought the more to kill him because of these two things. He had not only broken the Sabbath, but said also that God was his Father, making himself equal with God. Look in John 10, if you would. A little bit later, the ministry of Christ in John chapter 10. He had also in John chapter 10 given this great teaching about the shepherd and the sheep that you're all familiar with in John chapter 10. And toward the end of that, in verse 30, he said, "I and my Father are one." And notice the immediate response in verse 31. "Then the Jews took up stones again to stone him." Verse 33, "The Jews answered him, saying, For a good work we stone thee not, but for blasphemy. And because that thou, being a man, makest thyself God." And that's exactly what he was doing back in John chapter 5 and in verse 17. Now, notice this relationship of Jesus and the Father as it's unfolded in John chapter 17. John 5, verse 17. Verse 17, "My Father worketh." Notice that's in the present tense. It's not that my Father has worked. It's not that he will work. But it's that he's still working. He's working. That the phrase there, the wording there, "hitherto" means even unto now. My Father working even unto now. And it implies a co-work between the Father and the Son. Verse 19, I'm not going to read it right now, through verse 47, again, is one of the most important passages in this book or even the Bible of this relationship of the Son and the Father and their dealings with mankind now and hereafter in the future, in the judgment, even in the resurrection. In Jesus' words to these Jews, he uses three verily, verilys. Those are important. It's something that to signal something that is extraordinarily important. One of them is in verse 19. Then in verse 24, you have another verily, verily. And in verse 25, you have another verily, verily. And again, Jesus has this stage set. He has the attention of the Jews, and he is setting forth who he is, who his Father is, and concerning the work of Jesus Christ. In verse 19 through verse 23, Jesus then answered Jesus and said unto them, Verily, verily, I say unto you, the Son can do nothing of himself. Isn't that amazing words? Now, keep in mind, he's setting forth a relationship between himself and the Father. The Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do, for what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. For the Father loveth the Son, and showeth him all things that himself doeth. And he will show him greater works than these, that ye may marvel. For as the Father raiseth up the dead and quickeneth them, even so the Son quickeneth whom he will. For the Father judgeth no man, but hath committed all judgment unto the Son. Notice this clause of purpose here, that all men should honor the Son even as they honor the Father. He that honoreth not the Son honoreth not the Father which hath sent him. Now, in verse 19, and these other verses that we just read, notice that there is a dependence of Jesus upon the Father. And he does not act independently of the Father. Again, the words in verse 19 are very clear. The Son can do nothing of himself, but what he seeth the Father do, that's what the Son does. For what things soever he doeth, these also doeth the Son likewise. And Jesus here is over and over speaking of the Father, and that he is the Son. And he uses the word Son and the Father repeatedly through here. And the Jews had it right. He did claim to be equal with God. He claimed deity. He claimed to be the very, very Son of God. And his words are very condemning to the Jews.